for the past year, it's been different than the historical model that Triple Canopy had set up, because for the past year we had this space, an art storefront space, and that enabled a different kind of programming than we had had before that, which meant that you could have public presentations, kind of performance art, music concerts. So suddenly you had programs that still engaged internet forums and internet culture, user-generated content, internet themes, but presented in person. And along those lines, I think that 177 Livingston, which was the name of the space, was kind of among a few venues in New York that had that going on,
mm-hmm.
had presentation of material that's predominantly been viewed online.
But it means a lot, probably, for the organization, like Triple Canopy, to have the space to being able to present, because this is kind of a good PR, probably, especially if you're placed in a like area like Williamsburg.
Yeah,
probably a lot of audiences.
I mean, it was good PR to have the space in Brooklyn, and also to have the international space in Berlin and Sarajevo and Paris, and suddenly your audience
mm-hmm.
increases, not just from people viewing an online publication that they maybe come across through their social networks online, but they actually, you have a different kind of audience, at least temporarily. But it also crystallized or changed the relationship of the staff, because whereas formerly we were kind of this somewhat dispersed cloud of editors and artists and researchers working on a project that's not funded, so we don't have, it's not paying, and suddenly when you have a space, you have people seeing each other a lot more often, people working together on things that aren't editorial, buildings, bartending,
mm-hmm.
you know, just general upkeep, and it changed the flavor of the relationship between, at least in my experience, the relationship between staff, the editorial staff, because
mm-hmm.
it was more of a concrete material relationship. It wasn't just, you know, sending emails with someone and editing a project with them. It was.
So you said that you were working a lot. I mean, you said it's that at the beginning that you're working a lot internationally. You're connected with some organizations abroad, I mean, from all over the world.
I mean, I wouldn't say working a lot internationally, but that's a direction that is being made, you know.
But the web enables you to work internationally anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of the nature of publishing on the web is an international opportunity, whereas if you're sending magazines, you know, you have to really direct your attention internationally.
Mm-hmm.
There's that opportunity on the web is you're putting something out there and anyone's going to see it. It's not geographically constrained. And as Triple Canopy editors and artists and researchers travel internationally and expose new audiences, people come across it
mm-hmm.
from whatever they're searching, there is always the opportunity for some kind of momentum, international momentum and publicity and people submitting projects as well as viewing projects from abroad.
I noticed when I was like going through the magazine that you're like for the last issue that is published, for 10th issue, the way of functioning is that you need to make a small contribution to come to the contents, but for the older one it's for free. Am I right, actually?
It's not a... There's no requirements to pay any money to view it, but one feature of the website redesign... So the 10th issue was the first issue to be published in
mm-hmm.
the new redesign website, and there is a built-in applet for donations just as a way to tap into and track who's viewing, who's paying. It kind of gives more data on our end as editors of what people's interaction with the publication is, and also the opportunity to generate additional revenue. But it's by no means a requirement. It's not as if you, there's no content that you are required to pay to view.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was your experience. The idea is the more contributions we get, the more publication we can do and the more content we can generate. So it's kind of like public radio in that way, maybe.
Before you were talking about founding, how is the Triple Canopy financing, like these basic expenses?
There's a network of funders, private and companies and foundations. One of the big ones is the Brown Foundation, which is,
mm-hmm.
I think, in Texas, out of Houston, Texas. And the biggest one recently is the Warhol Foundation, which is in New York City, which gave us some serious funding. And
mm-hmm.
you can go to the website and see under support where a lot of our money is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But with that new applet on the website, we're trying to move towards having a more dispersed, small-scale generation of funding, as well as people donate through PayPal, whatever they want, for
mm-hmm.
viewing any article.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's big grants and fellowships that have come from.
Mm-hmm. So there are many options, actually.
New York Council for the Arts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there are options, and that was another thing about having a public space, is that it changed our opportunity for funding, because it gave a real crystallized form to us and a presence as a place, as opposed to this amorphous kind of publication that's online.
You said that you were established in 2007, 2008, somewhere in between, so it's quite a new initiative. What are your plans, actually, for the near future?
We're kind of between phases right now, as 177 Livingston shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of reimagining what the next manifestation of our energy is going to be, whether it's going to be in more public, performance and presentation based stuff, or if it's going to be online, more aimed at generating content and publishing works online. And regardless of whatever we do, I think one of our focuses is to more regularly publish more content online and work with the new platform that's been set up to streamline and kind of increase our rate of publication on the internet. And that's definitely a priority. But I would say, as that happens and as Triple Canopy continues to grow, it also seems like doing international and geographically based programs could be something that would grow with Triple Canopy as our audience.
When you had the space, maybe you had a more of control of what's going on.
Mm.
But who is, like, first of all, who is the target audience, for instance, for Triple Canopy? Because it's not oriented solely to the art. And on the other hand, do you control the visit of your website? I mean, do you know?
Monitor?
Yeah, monitor.
Is it monitored? I actually don't know that it's monitored, but I think it is. And I think that there is some kind of analytics that we have of, where people are coming from and how long they're spending on articles. And definitely as we gain development and research funding, that's something we'll move towards, I'm sure. Or I think that would be a good thing to do. But I don't really know that we have kind of a targeted audience per se, but I guess the target audience would just be kind of a community of people who are interested in kind of academic and not exclusively academic, but academically related research and art, and familiar with internet forms and material, because it's there is like a kind of freshness or generational components to YouTube videos and a lot of that stuff, but it definitely seems like that's not our audience exclusively. I mean, there's a huge range of ages and different people that show up to the events in person and that go to the site online. So it's not generational by any means.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more the audience is determined by the content, which is a really kind of a good thing, because It means that the technology hasn't necessarily filtered anyone out.
So do you think internet is accessible enough, you know, for most of the people? I mean, probably it is here in USA and probably it is in Europe, but globally, the internet is not actually accessible to the most of the population. And this, so when we are always talking about the liberating media, on the other hand,
really
it's not
that.
Really.
I think that's kind of a... I don't really believe that the democratization narrative of the internet is particularly articulate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there is something to be said for a form of literacy that that incorporates material that's coming from different sources. So if you have someone writing, there's a piece where someone's writing about, you know, going to the Preakness Stakes in Baltimore, and as a writer he's able to not just have it be his perspective, but he can have four different YouTube videos that are taken mm-hmm. by people there, and that it's not like a democratization of media by any means, but it definitely introduces a supporting perspective to the form. And mm-hmm. so far as audience, I don't think that anyone has kind of delusions about being accessible to everyone. I mean, by no means is that like something we would claim.
Mm-hmm.
But the more people become familiar with internet forms and using the web as a way to find information, the more we would continue to kind of play with the flexibility of, well, how can we shape the information that people are receiving, and what different combinations of that information can we make, and how can we work to make the receiving of that information and the relationship to that information one of serious depth and kind of concentration, and not just a cursory kind of surface level engagement with material. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that the audience is like necessarily something that we're focused on. It's more a focus on the relationship between audience and material.